Welcome to the program for Friday, July 6, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important to people who work for the government. And we count them down in order from three all the way up to number one on the Federal News Countdown. Before I introduce you to this week's experts, a little programming note that the Federal News Countdown will be on hiatus next week and the week after that. So this is your last countdown for 2 weeks, so there's pressure on you guys that are in the studio with me today. In 2 weeks, my guests will be Jonathan Bruhl, recently retired from the IBM Center for the Business of Government, and John Palguda on the Partnership for from the Partnership for Public Service. They will be on the Federal News Countdown on July 27th. So enjoy today's program, and my colleague Jared Serbu will be filling in for me next week as I go on vacation for a little bit and enjoy Rehoboth Beach, and you'll enjoy Jared. He's terrific, and he'll be here every day between 3 and 7 next week. On the Federal News Countdown today, I'm happy to welcome back to the show Larry Allen of Allen Federal Business Partners. Good to see you, my friend.
Francis, great to be seen.
And great to be conscious on a day like today, right? Not passed out outside. And Dan Blair, President and CEO of NAPA. It's great to have you here. And Dan, before I choke because of the heat, you brought in this event that you're having.
That's right, Francis.
In conjunction with the American Society of Public Administration, you and NAPA putting this event on next Wednesday. What's it all about?
Well, we were looking at the upcoming presidential transition. If President Obama's reelected, or if Governor Romney's elected, you're still going to have a transition taking place. If the president's reelected, you will still see a change over in the political class. You'll see some of the secretaries go. You'll see some deputy secretaries leave. You'll see them transfer around, assistant secretaries and the like. And you have a transition taking place. And if Governor Romney comes in, then it'll be a whole new class of politicals. And with this transition come a number of issues. And the National Academy of Public Administration is looking forward to unveiling a couple of websites that will help with the transition. It'll be the information place to go when it comes to questions about the presidential transition. The first one we'll be unveiling, we've been working with Ernst & Young on this website, and it'll detail some of the toughest jobs in government, what we call the prune jobs. There's the plum book that lists all the key political appointment jobs, but then if you take a plum and you age it, it turns into a prune. And we've identified about 50 of the toughest jobs in federal government. They'll be highlighted as well. And also at this event, we're going to be unveiling a website along with our fellow organization, this ASPA, the Association for Public Association. And we will be looking at these memoranda to national leaders. And this group will be out there advising and looking at some of the toughest jobs, toughest issues. And we've brought together a group of very eminent scholars and public administrators that will be advising the upcoming transition on these types of issues. This will be taking place at the Academy headquarters on the 11th, which is this upcoming Wednesday.
Yep.
And again, we wish to thank the American Society for Public Administration for joining us in this event. Should be a good one.
All right. We'll put some information about this up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Let's get started with this week's Federal News Countdown. The third most important federal news story of the week, according to Dan Blair, is from Government Executive. The headline is Scientists Join Opposition to Stock Act Disclosure Requirements. And it seems to me as more federal employees, as more executives learn about what they have to do because of the Stock Act, I think this list of people opposed to this in government is only going to get longer, Dan.
Well, it's interesting. Congress reacted to a 60-minute story back, I think at the beginning of the year, which alleged that insider trading was taking place by members of Congress. And so the Congress enacted this legislation known as the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act that forced additional public disclosure and more timely disclosure. But in doing so, they applied this not just to themselves, which they've already had to financially disclose their information for years, but to the executive branch, which also was under the same disclosure laws. But now it's going to be part of a researchable database that's supposed to be put up by the Office for Government Ethics. It's also going to require that those who have to disclose report their trading or any transactions within 30 days. It seems to be, for some executives, they're claiming that this is going to be quite burdensome. I know that filling out from my time in public service, filling out those financial disclosure forms took quite a long time. But now every 30 days you're going to have to do this if you have a transaction of any sort. Plus, it's going to be part of a researchable database, which raises questions about privacy. It raises questions about personal information being out there, identity theft. And then we hear from a previous story about this, which the Senior Executive Association has voiced its opposition. Mm-hmm. They said that it's going to be a disincentive for up-and-coming GS-14s and 15s to actually go into the senior executive service. We've heard about these kinds of disincentives before, and I'm agnostic. I don't know if that's true or not true. I'd like to see some more additional data on that because I do think it is important. It's important for the public to have a better understanding and have access to what public officials hold. They need to be assured that there's no insider trading going on or self-dealing or putting the interests of the private person above the interests of the public. At the same time, do you really, you know, should it be part of a researchable database? On the Hill, I understand that the staff and members have been subject to this kind of disclosure for a number of years now. Now it's going to the executive branch, so we're going to see.
Dan Blair's third most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is Scientists Join Opposition to Stock Act Disclosure Requirements. Larry Allen, your third most important story of the week is Jared Serbu's story on federalnewsradio.com. Headline, GAO Dismisses Protest Over Huge TRICARE Contract. This pretty much could conceivably knock out one of these, the incumbent contractor, just pretty much put him out of business. Is that fair?
Yes, it could, Francis, and that's one of the reasons why I flagged this story, that and the fact that outside of weapon systems procurements, you don't traditionally see media buys to try and influence directly or otherwise decision makers in government, and yet you saw extensive media buys by both of the companies involved here, both TriWest and United Health. And I think that speaks to the dollars involved, estimated at being over $20 billion award to serve one of the three DOD medical health insurance regions. That's really what this is about. Not everybody knows what a TRICARE is. Visions of Colonial Williamsburg hats, maybe. But, you know, TRICARE is the DOD health insurance program, and it's TRICARE because they split up the country into three different regions, and this is one of the three regions, and I suspect that we haven't seen the last chapter written on this procurement, Francis. The GAO just dismissed the protest out of hand. It's not that they ruled in favor of one party or the other. It's they didn't even give TriWest its day in court, if you will, or at least its day at the GAO. And yet, because of the dollar volume associated here and the downsized risk for the continued viability of the company that lost, I would be surprised if we didn't see some sort of filing in federal district court.
Well, that's what surprised me, I guess, about the comment that Jared found here from company president CEO David McIntyre of TriWest. We will be discussing this decision with our company's owners and the council who represent us, and will in turn be making a decision on what, if any, action we'll take in response to the GAO's denial of our protest. Most of the time, the GAO denies your protest, and that's pretty much the end of it. A lot of companies, I think, at that point would just give up and move on.
A lot of companies, if this were a $20 million procurement, certainly big enough for you or Dan and I to have some fun with, it might be the end of it. But this is a $20.6 billion procurement, and you don't do media buys. You don't have the attendant government affairs strategy that TriWest has had, unless you really understand that a significant amount of your corporate viability is on the line. So I think the CEO's statements were perhaps a little under accentuated.
Larry Allen's third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is GAO Dismisses Protest Over Huge TRICARE Contract. It's on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth right now, as are all the stories that we're counting down this week on the Federal News Countdown with Larry Allen and Dan Blair. The countdown continues in a moment.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 o'clock AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Marissa Levin, CEO of Information Experts and author of Built to Scale, How Top Companies Create Breakthrough Growth Through Exceptional Advisory Boards. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
This week on Agency of the Month, Chris Inglis, Deputy Director, National Security Agency, said,
"The first key to finding a good manager or a good leader is finding someone who has the skills to do that, not simply the demonstrated skills at what they were doing, but the skills to actually take on a different character of work as a manager or a leader, and that further that they aspire to do that. Assign somebody to be a manager or a leader who really doesn't want to do that, who won't thrive in doing that, and they'll prove you right. They will not thrive in doing that."
Sage Management is a leader in finding solutions to national security challenges within federal and state government. Being a small veteran-owned business, the leaders at Sage Management understand the importance of offering professional, streamlined services quickly and effectively. Their mission is to apply sound business management practices, proven engineering solutions, and community expertise in all aspects of national security. To find out more about Sage Management and career opportunities, visit sage-mgt.net.
Life's big decisions require some research. You get comparison reports before you buy a car. You hire an inspector when buying a house. You might even look up someone online before a date. But when you go to pick your primary care physician, sometimes you only get a name and number. That hardly seems fair. After all, the only person who has more influence on your health is you. It's different at Kaiser Permanente. All our doctors are listed online with information that paints a picture of who they are, so you know you're picking a doctor who is right for you, right for your family, and someone you can email. Oh, here's one for Dr. Amy Benoulis, who went to Northwestern. Dr. Lindsay Strickland is interested in chronic disease management and is accepting new patients. Bingo! Become a member, and no matter whom you choose, you get a true advocate for your health. So log on to kp.org/doctor and check us out. It could be the beginning of a healthy relationship. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
What's it like to be a political football? Export-Import Bank President Fred Hochberg knows, and he'll tell us on Monday's Federal Drive. I'm Emily Kopp. We'll talk with Hochberg about the ideological scuffle that nearly left the bank without money. Today, it's thriving. Lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week it's Larry Allen and Dan Blair, and we are up to on the countdown. Now, demonstrating that great minds think alike, each of you, for your second most important stories of the week, have chosen stories about the big storm last weekend. Larry, your story's from The Post. The headline is, "Friday's storms raise questions about safety of cloud computing." And a number of the people cited in this story are federal people, and we'll talk about them in a moment. And Dan, your second most important federal news story of the week is also from The Post. The headline is, "On the eve of the 4th, another day without power." And there are still folks today that are without power. I saw on our sister station WTOP's website last night that Pepco was saying that of their customers that were out, 90% of the people have had their power restored. Well, to me, that says 10% of the people are still sitting there in the dark and in the heat.
That's really good consultancy speak to me. You know, it's like, well, we're going to do 90%. We're going to get 90%, not a target of 100%. But what happens, as you said, to that other 10%? Is it going to be an hour? Is it going to be a day? Is it going to be a week? Is it going to be 2 weeks? before they get everyone restored. I found it frustrating. Our power went out on Friday at about 10 p.m., 9:30, 10 p.m., and we got it restored at about 3 p.m. on Wednesday.
Ooh.
So, you know, at least we didn't have a tree go through our house.
Yeah.
So I feel fortunate along those lines. But it was very frustrating because every time we would get call Pepco, and I actually got live people a couple of times. I was amazed. But you would hear this, your power will be restored by 11 p.m. July 6th. You've got to be kidding me. We live in the nation's capital. We should be prepared for something like this. I know it was a significant storm, but it didn't wipe out the district. It didn't wipe out a third of the town like the tornado in Joplin, Missouri. And this is called emergency preparedness. To me, this wasn't so much about the federal government not being prepared. It was about the dependencies of the federal government, the utilities. And I just don't – it really scares me to think that a storm – and we have a new – we were laughing about this earlier. We have a new word in our lexicon today, a derrico. How many people knew what a derrico was before this?
Closest I got to that was Jericho.
Jericho. And those walls came tumbling down.
They sure did.
Like our big trees did in this neighborhood.
That's exactly right.
It's frustrating, and it raises some very serious questions about how well prepared – how well are we – prepared to deal with a true national emergency.
When I drove around on Saturday afternoon, Larry, my response to that question would have been not much, because my wife and I drove from Gaithersburg down Route 355 to Rockville across Montrose Road there, and I can maybe count on one hand the amount of businesses or anything that were open at that point. It was desolate. It was like Christmas Day. When you drive down a major thoroughfare in our area and everything is closed.
Well, it's the same way it was in Northern Virginia where I am, Francis. And I think the point is a good one, that these are things that we rely on as federal employees, as federal contractors in the Washington area to live our lives and to do the work that we need to do to keep the country running. And yet, if we can't go to the grocery store because the grocery store is not open, if we can't telework because we don't have any cable or high-speed internet access for days, how are we going to keep the business of government up and running? And it's a very real issue. And the fact is that, you know, this storm that hit last Friday originated in the Midwest, and we had at least a half a day's notice that something like this was coming, and that's to lay people like the people who are in the studio right now. So who knows how much the forecasters had, mm-hmm. and yet this was a real issue. And the reverberations come out to things like cloud computing. The government's moving things to the cloud, like telework. Everybody wants to do telework, and telework is a major part of every agency's continuity of operations plan. And when you don't have any tele, you can't work.
Mm-hmm.
And if your cloud is not accessible from where you are, then you don't have that functionality. I'm not sure there are any easy answers to this other than to ensure that the local and regional infrastructure is in place that's necessary to support the seat of the federal government.
Larry, your story in the Post says the violent storm that blasted through the region Friday night disrupted power to several data centers at Amazon's web service facility in Ashburn. One of them lost both its primary and backup sources of power, causing outages that stretched into Saturday. Now, I think in this whole conversation, Dan's point is the best one, and that is, this was a storm. Is it a bad storm? Yes, it was. It was very powerful. I sat right through it and saw what was going on in our neighborhood. It wasn't pretty, but it was just a storm. We're in Washington, D.C., with the potential for events to happen that are extremely unpleasant and much more terrible than a storm that blows through in an hour and a half or so, as this one did. And to think that we're at the mercy of the infrastructure that we have is pretty scary, I think.
Well, and I hope that this would be used as a learning experience, because we're certainly had some vulnerabilities exposed that didn't come right in, thankfully, on the central part of the federal mission this time, but who knows about the next time. And it's not just a single event, Francis. It's what happens when there's a single event that's merely the opening chapter to a series of things, coordinated or just exploitive of a given situation, and suddenly we really find ourselves in some serious trouble. These are things that not just the local leaders in this region need to talk about, but Congress and the federal leadership and the executive branch need to talk about as well.
Do you get any sense that those kinds of conversations are happening, Dan?
Oh, I think I would be shocked if you didn't see some of the utility presidents or executives brought up, not brought before Congress, because this is something that really Congress needs to look into, because it is a national issue. It's one of preparedness of the nation's capital to deal with something like that. You know, and Larry, you mentioned earlier, you know, that this is a learning experience, but I'm kind of tired of learning experiences. You know, we've had a learning experience with the ice storm a year ago. Then we had the snowstorms of 2 years ago. It seems that we're all, you know, every day is Groundhog Day for our utilities. And that's crazy. That's really unacceptable. And, you know, when we were talking about telework earlier, I know people who still don't have their internet service. And so if you are telework, I mean, this is the first day the government has been back open on a normal schedule. If a storm can send the government, and it didn't shut down, but into unscheduled leave, you know, think about what a real emergency is going to do. And this isn't an issue about the federal government. It's an issue about the region. It's an issue about the city. Mayor Gray was in China when this happened and didn't get back until Monday. We need to really prioritize and say and figure out, well, let's go back to basics about what's important and what our priorities are as the nation's capital in ensuring continuity of government in an emergency.
You've each mentioned telework, and I want to hit on that when we come back and continue our conversation about each of your choices for the second most important federal news story of the week. Larry Allen choosing the Post story about the safety of cloud computing, given the storm that we've just had, and Dan Blair choosing a Post story about losing power and the extended power outages in the region. We'll continue on this week's Federal News Countdown in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What is e-diplomacy? How is e-diplomacy moving state from a culture of need to know toward a culture of need to share? And what does the future hold for e-diplomacy at the U.S. Department of State? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Richard Boley, Director, Office of e-Diplomacy at the U.S. Department of State. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved. That moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Federal cloud computing has never been easier. Amazon Web Services GovCloud is now on GSA's IT-70 schedule exclusively through Aquilent. Eliminate security concerns, simplify procurement, and ease implementation. A community cloud created just for the government makes it secure. GSA IT-70 makes it simple. Only Aquilent makes it easy. Go to buygovcloud.com now for Amazon Web Services GovCloud and Aquilent's end-to-end federal cloud services. That's buygovcloud.com.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
And it probably set back the program for a couple of years. But this demonstrated that cyber weapons could physically destroy critical infrastructure. Now, the problem is we have SCADA devices attaching all of the infrastructure we have in the U.S. Our dams, our electrical power grid, everything is remotely controlled by the Internet. And there are always a SCADA device in between the Internet connection and what the device is doing.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Palo Plus. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Being active improves quality of life. The Presidential Active Lifestyle Award, also known as PALA Plus, is a program that challenges kids and adults to be more active. Pala Plus challenges us to be physically active 5 days a week for 6 weeks. Shelley Full is Executive Director of the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition.
In addition, we've added the nutrition component, hence the plus, so it's Pala Plus, encouraging you to set a nutrition goal for each of those 6 weeks.
Fruits and vegetables are essential. So is drinking more water and less sugar-sweetened drinks.
It's really about feeling better. On the more longer term, it's going to help reduce our risks for heart disease, some cancers, stroke, osteoporosis, diabetes, and the like.
Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Are you a rising government leader? Do you want to inspire and recharge? Well, then the next generation of government training summit is for you. The OPM-approved training event is brought to you by GovLoop and Young Government Leaders. The two-day summit is designed for and by energetic government leaders. This year's training will be held July 26th and 27th at the JW Marriott here in Washington, D.C. Head over to nextgengov.com. That's nextgengovt.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Larry Allen of Allen Federal Business Partners and by Dan Blair. He's the president and CEO of the National Academy of Public Administration. You can find all the stories that we're counting down at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Dan Blair's number two, second most important federal news story of the week, and Larry's second most important story, both revolve around the storm that hit last Friday afternoon evening and how it affected operations in the federal government. Larry's story is from the Post about cloud computing, and Dan's story is about the fragility of the electrical grid, given the fact that some areas were out of power for several days and some areas continue to be out of power. One of the elements that we've touched on so far in our conversation about this is telework. I spoke to the director of telework at the Patent and Trademark Office on the program on Monday or Tuesday, and that's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, Danette Campbell, and she told me that PTO actually did it in reverse, where they actually had to open their headquarters to allow people who were out of power to come in and work to be able to continue to keep the agency going at headquarters. Now, fortunately, they had power, or they had backup generators, or they had whatever going. But I imagine there were some agencies that maybe not have been able to offer that option to their employees. I don't know.
The other thing, frankly, Francis, is fortunate that we were in a holiday week. So we had the infrastructure necessary to pick up whatever increased traffic on Metro, on the roads, presuming those were the ones that didn't have trees across them. Let's face it, this past week was not a normal work week. We had the 4th of July holiday in the middle of it. People were taking off. If this had happened, say, in the middle of a work week instead of on a Friday night, and there weren't 2 days to at least get some traction or beachhead established on recovery, what would the impact have been on federal continuity of operations if this had happened on, say, a Tuesday in October?
Yep.
And I think those are the types of questions you need to ask. I mean, it's great that PTO was able to open their building up, but on a regular work week, who knows whether or not those people would have been able to get to the PTO building.
Yeah, Dan, it seems to me the question here that agencies should be asking, and not just federal agencies, organizations of all types, what if this happened on a Tuesday morning with a building already full of people who felt obligated to either leave or who were sitting there squirming if they did decide to stay?
Well, walking in, getting up here today in preparation for the interview this afternoon in our conversation, you walk outside. Can you imagine if you lost power right now in an office building? You have no elevator, you have no lights, and it's 100 degrees outside. So it raises some really serious questions about how well are we prepared, not just at the federal level, but at business, at the state, local, regional levels to address something like that. And I hate to say it, but we had a Tuesday morning in September, 11 years ago, in which we did have, a terrorist attack. And luckily, we had everything up and running. But if we wouldn't have, what would happen if everything isn't up and running? And like you all said, it occurs during the midweek.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some serious issues, and I hope that our policymakers start looking at it. I think that what you brought up was this reverse telework. I don't know how well agencies are, I don't want to say prepared, but how well are equipped at this point to engage in this reverse telework. It'll be interesting to see. You know, are we going to go back to the paradigm of 25 years ago where everyone has to come back into the office?
And certainly, Dan, the trend is exactly the other way. You look at not just PTO, but every major federal agency, they're building or renovating major headquarters or other operational centers based on the fact that not everyone employed by the agency is going to have a physical space there.
You look at the renovations they've done to the GSA building.
Exactly.
And their, the headquarters building down on G Street, Northwest, and the idea of hoteling. But what would happen if you had to bring everyone back? Kind of strikes me like the D.C. public schools. You know, for years, the student population was dwindling. But as the districts come back, the schools have come back. And all of a sudden, you're starting to have pressure on that. In the meantime, right. The district was getting rid of excess properties, selling schools to developers for condominiums and apartments. And are we going to have to see, is it coming back around that we're going to have to rebuild schools? It just is interesting to see that we don't plan ahead very well, that we think about what's over the course of the next year or 5 years. But we don't plan out to see how this is cyclical and how to address it.
I guess the only confidence that I take in that comment, Dan, is that at all levels of government, at all levels of operations, not just government, we seem to be equally bad at that kind of foresight.
Well, that's a critical issue.
You can't just blame one particular level or another.
Absolutely. And frankly, this wasn't a federal government issue this time. This was a regional, this was a state, this was a local issue. But it also goes to show you that there's a lot of stress right now on the state and local governments. At the National Academy of Public Administration, we have a large number of fellows who come from state and locals. And actually, the event that I talked about earlier about that we're hosting in midweek, We'll have some ideas that are being exchanged about what can be better done to help state and local governments because they're in a really tight budget crunch right now. But this highlights it in a microcosm of what can happen when our dependent, you know, when utilities and other dependencies that we all rely on fail. And how it affects our daily lives and business.
Both of my guests today have chosen stories from the Washington Post as their second most important federal news story of the week. Larry Allen's is headlined, Friday's Storms Raise Questions About Safety of Cloud Computing. And Dan Blair's is headlined, On the Eve of the Fourth, Another Day Without Power. You can read both of them linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week as selected by each of my guests when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Craig Carpenter, Army veteran and advocate for disabled veterans on the Gateway to Veterans Health and Wellness panel.
It's less of an excuse, it's less of a barrier for me to take care of myself. It's much easier now because I don't have to worry about and figure out how I'm going to get there. I have the physical challenges of getting myself and my equipment there is taken out of the loop because my health care is coming to me. It's coming inside of my home. That barrier is no longer there.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
My Health eVet, VA's personal health record, helps veteran patients actively participate in their health and well-being. If you're a VA patient, consider upgrading your account today at myhealth.va.gov. With an upgraded account, veterans can securely access personal health records online 24/7. An upgraded account offers secure messaging, which strengthens the partnership between veterans and your healthcare team. To learn more, visit myhealth.va.gov. That's myhealth.va.gov. Take control of your VA healthcare.
Time is running out. Congress has until September 30th to pass agency spending bills for 2013. What's the latest on your agency's funding? How much will your budget be cut? And how will sequestration play a role? FederalNewsRadio.com's budget tracker has the latest on the 12 annual appropriations bills. Follow your agency's funding as it makes its way through the House and Senate and to President Obama's desk. Find the budget tracker online at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search budget tracker.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Sean Henry is president of CrowdStrike Services, former executive assistant director of the FBI.
The barrier of entry is really low because anybody with a laptop and an internet connection or a USB thumb drive has the ability to access a network and to pilfer data that's worth millions or billions of dollars.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
You're listening to the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests on the countdown this week, Dan Blair of NAPA and Larry Allen of Allen Federal Business Partners. And we are up to, on the Federal News Countdown,
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Dan Blair, is from the Washington Post. And you always throw me a curveball, Dan. That's why I like having you on this program. Your most important story of the week is headlined, Congress gives Feds Reason to Clap. It is from the Washington Post. It's a Joe Davidson column. Why did you choose this as the most important story for Feds this week?
Well, I like Joe, but apart from giving him a little plug on
his favoritism.
Apart from that, though, I like the first sentence in here. It said maybe they were feeling patriotic. I mean, this is good legislation. The phase-in retirement will help the federal government address the potential brain drain that will be taking place as retirement eligible federal employees go off the rolls. It's a good way of addressing that. It's good management. Also, the Hatch Act changes in the bill that the Senate Homeland Security Governmental Affairs Committee approved is good. But I was looking for something about patriotism. And when Joe wrote, maybe they were feeling patriotic, it struck me that the Washington region is very interesting when it comes to patriotism. And the public display of patriotism. If you go to a Caps game, you go to a Redskins game, you go to a Nats game, when the national anthem is played, everyone stands, it's quiet, people put their hands over their heart, men take off their hats, and they are very reverential when it comes to the national anthem. And I'm not sure, as I recall in other cities when I've gone to sports events there, I don't recall that kind of reverential treatment. I don't think it's disrespectful at all, but I think it's part of that. You know, the D.C. region is here for one reason, and it's the federal government. We have a huge military presence. We have a huge veterans presence. So I think we're just a little bit more attuned, but it always strikes me the public displays of patriotism here. Whether you're a Republican or Democrat or independent or anything else, that seems to be one thing that kind of brings everyone together. Is this public display of affection for our country. If you looked at the AT&T golf tournament last week up at Congressional, the flag pins were flags. Now, I thought that was, you know, in celebration of the 4th of July, but that was, I like that. I like to see that people say, I'm proud to be an American. You look at the events that surrounded that golf tournament, you had the veterans and the armed services involved in that. It just is really, and you look at the 4th of July. I mean, you not only have the fireworks display on the mall. If you watch a rerun of it on TV, you see a fireworks display over in PG County. You know, that if you look at the parades, we had one in D.C., but you had them over in the Palisades. You had it, I think, at Tacoma Park. You had them in Virginia, Maryland, all over the place. I just find this public display of patriotism to be very heartwarming. And it says something about us as Americans and also as residents of the nation's capital and the region around us.
Larry, I think Dan's right on target there, especially when it comes to the example of the national anthem. I went to the Nats game last night when it was about 5,000 degrees. And may I just say, full disclosure, I left in the bottom of the eighth inning.
Ooh.
Yeah, and missed the good part of the game. But at any rate, I actually noticed that very thing last night, totally at random, that and Dan's right on target. People in other cities are not disrespectful of the national anthem, but there is some extra level of dignity, I think, with which people observe the playing of the national anthem and references to the United States and patriotism here.
Well, certainly, if you've been in this area for any amount of time, you know that the national anthem usually ends with its own version of O, which immediately identifies you as somebody who's grown up or lived in this region for a specified period of time. And I always think that's kind of a neat regional identifier, and you still hear it in Washington, even though we have the Nats who are currently in first place.
Well, but you hear it at Caps games now, too, because of Ovechkin.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's right on, and Dan's right again, because the high number of military, both active duty and retired, that we have here, but also the fact that so many of the people in this region are current or former public servants. And those that aren't are ones that are one, at the most, 2 degrees removed from public service. So this is something that really permeates our regional psyche, and you see the attendant results with things like the 4th of July and the parades and the multiple fireworks, and the fact that for an area that's known for its workaholic mentality, Wednesday was not one of those days.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have the cynicism in these. We're known for being cynics about everything, but not when it comes to this. There was a video that went, maybe on YouTube, and went viral, of a number of World War II vets who were coming in. This was, I think it was in June, and they came in through Reagan National. And when they got off, disembarked from the plane, everyone in the waiting area stood up and clapped for them. I mean, that's really hard. I mean, that's just an incredible experience, I think, in that when you have the patients from Walter Reed who are at the game in that special section that they reserve for them, and when they introduce them during the game, everyone stands up and gives them a standing ovation. So I think it speaks, you know, for all the problems we have and for all the problems we create for ourselves in this region and for all the cynicism that we all have. I think that when it comes down to it, I think that one thing we can all agree on is that we love our country.
I did want to just mention something briefly in this story as far as the bill that you mentioned, the phase retirement bill, that kind of actually fits with this and this idea that people can of differing ideas can be on the same side of an issue. Joe Davidson points out, and I noticed this in our coverage at federalnewsradio.com when this bill was passed, this is an issue that Congressman Darrell Issa, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, and Colleen Kelly, the president of the National Treasury Employees Union, both agree on. I don't think you could find in Washington two people who disagree on things more often than the two of them, both of whom I like and both of whom have been guests on my show. But boy, oh boy, to get the two of them on the same side of an issue, that's saying something.
It's something else to celebrate, isn't
it? Exactly right.
Something else to celebrate.
Dan Blair's most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is Congress Gives Feds Reason to Clap, and you can read it and all of our countdown stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Larry Allen's number one most important federal news story of the week to wrap up this week's federal news countdown when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose.
This is a transformative time for the Department of Defense. The military is progressing toward a smaller, nimbler force capable of rapidly responding to any threat around the globe. Secure, next-generation communications capabilities are essential, ensuring personnel can get the information they need from virtually any location, anytime, on any compatible device. Microsoft offers today's military leaders the next wave of technologies, providing advanced security features without compromising productivity and mission effectiveness, all at a price that makes sense. From the front lines to the command center to the Pentagon, Microsoft and its global partner network are working with defense leaders to create solutions that not only meet but anticipate today's service member needs. Whether it's providing secure online collaboration and editing capabilities or voice and video through unified communications, Microsoft is equipping warriors in motion with the familiar technology they use every day to get the job done. That's real impact for tomorrow's military. Learn more about defense IT solutions at Microsoft.com/DOD.
The year was 1912. There were 141 miles of paved roads in the U.S. The Eiffel Tower was the world's tallest building. The airplane was 9 years old. And three aviation pioneers were hard at work in California. Two of them, Alan and Malcolm Lockheed, were spending their nights building a seaplane in a garage where they spent their days repairing cars. The third, Glenn L. Martin, whose first airplane factory was a rented church, was taking a leap of faith on a new design. In May of that year, Martin piloted his Model 12 in a 30-minute flight over Newport Bay. and the Lockheed brothers soared to an altitude of 300 feet over San Francisco Bay in their Model G. 100 years later, the company that bears their names still shares their pioneering spirit. See their story and others unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100years.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by MetLife and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected this week by Dan Blair and Larry Allen. And Larry, your most important federal news story of the week is a GovExec story headlined, Small Business Share of Contracts Shrunk Slightly in 2011, SBA Reports. There are a lot of people all over town that are really unhappy about this. I had Guy Timberlake, the American Small Business Coalition, on the program earlier yesterday. Jaime Gracia from Seville Consulting will be on the program this afternoon to explain why he thinks what Congress's response to this is what he calls lip service. This is really just messing a lot of people up.
Well, a couple things I thought were noteworthy about this story, Francis. One is, in the classic government style, this came out on July 2nd, so tried to bury bad news while everybody was out of town and not looking, particularly Congress, that always reacts
strongly. Look over there, a butterfly.
That's right. Look over there, firework.
Take out the trash week, right?
Uh-huh. That's right. And especially Congress, that always does react very emotionally to these numbers. The other thing that I thought was really interesting is that the statistics put out by the Small Business Administration showed that the government missed its small business mark by a full point more than it did last year. It was supposed to do 23%. Last year it missed by a fraction of a percentage. This year by 1.6%. They missed it by. Anecdotally, what I've been seeing, though, is more and more things that are going to small businesses. All the feedback I've been getting from the companies that I talk to and even some of the government buyers suggests that, at least as far as 2012 is concerned, that small businesses should be getting more business. So the report that came out talked about federal agency use of small businesses in the last fiscal year. It'll be interesting to see what happens this time next year, Francis, when the SBA numbers come out, because anecdotally I'm hearing a different story.
Interesting. And what I jumped out at me about this was this: these numbers came out, Dan, in a blog post from John Shiraka, the Associate Administrator for Government Contracting and Business Development at SBA. And the quote here is, this scorecard reflects the need for improvement in small business procurement across the federal government. That's the most gently gentle description of these numbers that I've heard. I mentioned one of my guests later this afternoon is not nearly as easy on these numbers as Mr. Shiraka is at SBA.
Well, those are very carefully chosen words.
Yes, they are.
But I agree with Larry that this is interesting. They call this the take out the trash week.
Right.
Because nothing's around, and this is a good time to, if you want to put out some bad news or news that you really, that you prefer not to be highly publicized, to get that out this week. So maybe we should be scouring these kinds of weeks more often, because we get some really good, interesting tidbits.
I have this conversation with my colleague Jason Miller from time to time. He reminds us of that very fact, that when we think, oh, things are going to be slow and nothing's going to be happening, that's when we have a tendency to get numbers like this. What's the solution for this, Larry? You've been involved in this field for a long, long time. These numbers have always been challenging for the agencies to meet. One of the things that this story mentions, the possibility that Congress wants to raise the goal to 25%. If you can't make 23%, what's to think that you can make 25%?
Well, that's a very good point. In fact, the government's never, I don't think, really ever hit 23%. If they did, it was just for 1 year in there. And yet, legislation's already passed the House of Representatives that would increase the goal to 25%. And that's now in a bill, it's in the defense authorization bill for the next fiscal year. And those people who follow things like the defense authorization bill know that that's a bill that will actually get passed. Whether or not that specific provision from the House side gets passed is something that the Senate will have to determine in the next month or so. But in that House bill, in addition to the 25% language, Francis, there are also separate pieces of legislation that are imbued into the defense authorization bill that would hold SES people and federal agencies accountable for their agency's failure to meet small business contracting goals, things that would tinker with their bonus structure, for example, if an agency didn't meet its goals. Whether or not you agree with that specific approach, I think that there is a body of evidence to suggest that unless there is some real accountability in the executive branch for achieving these goals, that we're going to continue to miss them. And one of the things on the flip side of this is usually you hear the term a lot, close enough for government work.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you miss by a half a point, a tenth of a point, or a point and a half, nothing's ever close enough in the small business contracting world. We're looking for people to come in at higher than 23%. And until or unless that happens, you're going to see, I think, an increased call for accountability at the specific agency level to get these numbers up. Some agencies exceed them. Some agencies miss them. Overall, the government just got a B. While you and I might be happy with a B, nobody's really happy in this category unless there's an A-plus on the record.
One of the things that I think was interesting about these the take-out-the-trash weeks, as you call them, Dan, is the organizations that come along behind the trash dump and say, hey, by the way, look at us, when they're hoping that somebody will be distracted. For example, we got a note that VA has done extremely well with veteran-owned, disabled small businesses contracting. Their numbers are like six times what their goals was set out to be. I talked to a speaker from the Navy yesterday. They're having extreme success with small business. So it's interesting when something like this comes out that people kind of jump on the bandwagon in reverse to say, by the way, we're doing it well over here. And why shouldn't they? I don't mean to sound like I'm criticizing them for that. I think that's a good idea that
It's not all it certainly isn't the fault of SBA that the other agencies aren't doing that. So
right.
You need to have an enforcement mechanism. I'm not sure holding senior executives
right.
accountable is the right enforcement mechanism, especially if that executive doesn't have a lot of procurement authority. But it's a question of making a leadership priority for agency heads. And if you hold agency heads accountable for it, then it's surprising what gets done when you have agency leadership attention.
I appreciate both of you being here on the Federal News Countdown, gentlemen. Larry Allen's most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. Small business share of contracts shrunk slightly in 2011, SBA reports. All of our stories online at federalnewsradio.com.